The demons set fire to the cities, villages, pasturing grounds, cow pens, gardens, agricultural fields, and natural forests. They burned the hermitages of the saintly persons, the important mines that produced valuable metals, the residential quarters of the agriculturalists, the mountain villages, and the villages of the cow protectors, the cowherd men. They also burned the government capitals. So yesterday, Sutapa Prabhu gave class and was talking, mentioning that Hiranyakashipu's motives was all based around envy. And that's not very difficult in this world to be envious, given that really the main principle of being here is out of envy. Envy of Krishna. So what did Hiranyakashipu do in this case when his brother Hiranyaksha was killed by Lord Vishnu? He decided to just demolish and destroy everything to do with religiosity. No holds barred, no mercy at all for anyone. He talks here of just sending in his men to destroy the villages and cities, all the cows, the cow pens, all the agricultural fields. You can imagine them all burning away, all being destroyed, all at once, all the natural forest. And then he's even going after the saintly persons as well in the forest. They're just practicing their meditation and he wants to finish everyone off. He's that angry. He wants that much revenge. And of course he knows that, why should he do such a thing to his own kingdom? But that's the nature of demons, is that they don't consider anything to do with protection of the citizens when you have some leader like that. It's purely dictatorship. And I mean, my understanding of most dictators is that I just see them as kind of little boys, generally being boys in their bedrooms having a temper tantrum, and then never getting past that kind of stage where they really look at what they have done or why things happen, or and they take it out on everyone else. So it's all based around insecurity and fear, because they didn't go through those growing up stages that everybody else gets through in order to come out a little bit more peaceful. So in the age of Kali, we have to live with the reactions of those moods. So I was thinking which way to approach this verse. A number of different ways came to my mind, and I was thinking that really, if we look at this, I wanted to concentrate on in this way, that we're moving from a dismantled society. That's where we're at right now. We're completely dysfunctional as far as society is concerned with regards to religiosity. And we're trying to put it back together again to resurrect Varnashram. So Varnashram is really the divisions of society. Would anybody like to mention to me again the Varnashram, how it's constituted? Quickly. Both? Sorry. Yeah. Sudras are starting at the bottom, yeah. Vaishya is the next one up. Kshatriya is going up next. And then the Brahmana at the top. And then the ashrams. Brahmachari. Grihastha. Vanaprastha. And sannyas. Thank you, Will. And then Chitapa mentioned something beyond that basic understanding of Varnashram for the majority of society was something like this, because two aspects to Varnashram. Oh yes, Ansarik as well. Yes, thank you. Yes, ordinary, but I was thinking more of Devi Varnashram, which is when citizens, the people, are directing their activities towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, that's kind of where I'm starting, and that's where I'd like to end in terms of us here today re-establishing Varnashram. Can it be done? In half an hour? What do you think? I haven't been to class actually very much lately. I've not been in good health, and I haven't been here in the temple program. Please forgive me for that. I've not just not been that well. But if you remember when I was last in class, which was all of 2 months ago, I'm pretty much known for asking more of the questions, and some of them are quite lengthy. Some of them are quite embarrassed by the length of the question. I'm not. I want to know. But I hope not to be perhaps so long-winded in these questions that I want to put up, which is probably where we're going to end up. The point I'm getting at is that it's not just finding the solutions to a problem that is the full package. Einstein was particularly rated for his questions. He put them up, and then others, or rather, with others, he explored the meaning of MC squared. Not a physicist myself, so whatever all that means, but it's all the laws of the universe and consciousness and whatever. But he put the questions up, and that's really what we need to do if we're going to move. Because if I mention out now to anybody now, when you hear the words, this is particularly to more the intimate audience of the congregation and familiar with a lot of the talk that perhaps goes on around Varnashram and what's people's first thoughts. If I can just, anybody just stand up, what's your first thoughts about Varnashram? Gee. Yes.
That's far enough. That's not Ashram, obviously. Varnashram is the understanding that we can institute or maintain a system where the ashram influences the other, all the varnas, and gives the shelter that brings meaning and equality and justice to society. So when we talk about varna, ashram,
Okay.
Who pretend to be.
So, yeah. Thank you, Guru. Can I just come to answer that in case, is the necessary on the same, something different? So what you're saying is that the varnas, the way that the divisions are situated in society today, is pretty much similar. We've got sort of a class system of organization and dissemination of people's skills and occupations and abilities. So therefore, why change so much of that? But through the ashram, influence people to spiritualize their activities, their positions. Yes. 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 Thank you. Prabhuji.
On the other hand, the Brahmana are broken down, and you don't find that much spiritual knowledge dissipated, the culture of Brahmana. In India, on the other hand, you see that Kshatriya culture is totally broken back by the Spanish invasion, and the whole culture was chaotic, and because of that Kshatriya, you find so much corruption, and you don't have any system.
Thank you. Yeah, it's topsy-turvy and splintered, and people have got their own ideas about what these particular divisions are and who should represent in them. Thank you. Well, some of what I say when we approach Varnashram could be appearing as controversial, some of the things I'm hoping to mention. But then I'm thinking, well, it's not something that we should avoid as we do. Ah, forget it, Varnashram won't work. And I'm really, presenting it in that way because it's we're the intelligent here, and it pricks up the ears when you do ask controversial questions. Not to cause trouble in people's hearts, literally, but just that it brings people to the point in question, what matters in our life. So if we're avoiding what appears to be controversial, are we helping ourselves? Are we actually looking at what's needed for us as a society? So, if I ask the question, why did we come here? Why did we come to Krishna consciousness? I mean, think about it. Why did we come? Now, we're letting that settle in for a second, is the all-important question that we have to have if we want a better position for ourselves. We rejected the way that society is as a whole and decided that we needed, that was a big step, a big leap, and we decided that we needed a smaller community with values, guidelines, structure and arrangement that was better than the one that we've rejected, isn't it? Correct? So, what are we doing to actually ensure that that's actually happening? I'm saying that because we're all aware of many things that are working very positively, but many holes in terms of welfare, in terms of how holistically our lives in this society is managed. What are we contributing towards it? Is it just preach, boo, preach, preach, preach? Get out there, save the souls. What about us? Do we have the idea of a retirement plan once we walk in the door, that our retirement plan is going to be here with all the ceremonies and garlands and well-wishing that we did it? Or is it just that, look, it's good for now, 5 years and I'll be out? Because that's the reality. So is that planning our lives if we're not sure how long we're actually going to remain? I'm talking particularly to the residents. But then we see so many of the community as well, after leaving the ashram, just saying, leaving altogether. Just feeling some lethargy. So it's controversial. I'm getting to the point that we avoid talking about the things that matter to us the most. So if you're going to consider esoteric subject matter, you need, by default, a basic platform of stability and security. It's very, very hard to enter into that arena of the idea of transcendence if you're always looking at your survival needs. Survival meaning fears that we have, and if they are taken care of, then we can start really putting our consciousness into loving God. So those who are hungry, starving, that's not on the radar for them, the idea about what is God wearing today? What does he look like? Who's he playing with today? It's not on their radar. So, forgive me, let me just look here. Some of the effects, I was just watching this this speaker, Jamie Oliver. Everybody familiar with Jamie Oliver? The chef, the kind of, is he Cockney? Essex boy, he's a chef, and what was he called, there was a title he had, the naked chef, I don't think literally on TV he was naked, but he's a very loud personality, and beyond all the FDA, these are the Food Development Agency kind of officials. More than anyone, he's contributing more to society in terms of the welfare and importance of food. Forgive me, he's a meat eater. But what he's also looking at is health on many other levels. And he was speaking in this massive audience of Americans and just being himself and saying, did you know that in milk today, we talked about the degradation of cow protection here. In milk, what they're doing is that they put in almost as much sugar as what you would find in a can of fizzy pop. No, it can't be true. But But that's what particularly they're giving to school children in these special cartons that they're giving. This is in America. I'm not sure what the situation here, but I'm sure it's similar. So enough sugar. Now, if we're wondering why our kids are hyper and getting into all kinds of tantrums and whatever, there's the source. But it's done in the mood of welfare for the kids, education, good value, health, etc. So they have enough sugar how much was it? I forget now how much it was for a year, but for 5 years, over a 5 year period at school, they have a wheelbarrow. He poured out a wheelbarrow of sugar onto the stage and said, "That's what your kids are eating. This is in our milk." Now, I know particularly the community here are pretty much sugar addicts. I'm saying that in that regard too, that we do have to think about what we're eating. Shishi Radha Gokulananda Ki, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki, Shishi Gonatai. I won't dwell on that, but it just brought to light, you know, he was saying, let me just wait for this. Yes, he was saying, oh yes, I've written it down here. 8 tablespoons of sugar a day, that's what they have, because of that, just through milk alone. Not what to speak of the fizzy drink that they drink on top. You know, major health epidemic. So then what he said was, if he was to come up there and say, "I found a cure for AIDS and cancer," everyone would storm on the stage, pulling him to pieces, saying, give me that cure. So he was saying that with regards to food, just it's preventative. All these diseases that we're having is all preventative. But he was saying what we need to do is reboot, change what we're just accepting as the norm in society. Look at it. What are you actually, if you're talking about creating intelligence for your children and then saying you don't care what they drink, they'll get through it, and we want them to go to such and such public school, this, that, and force them, cram them full of exams, and yet they're finished with regards to the amount of sugar that they eat. It's a controversial subject. Are we prepared to say it's controversial and get upset about it? Probably not. So, why? Why is that? Why, when I was talking on the wider issue of Varnashram, why would we not perhaps say any more than the length of this class today in terms of how serious we treat it? Because that's the situation that we've got to as a community, as a society in ISKCON, that we're just avoiding. You know, there's this thing, I was just speaking to a friend, and this thing called, and he taught me about this, it's from Greek, and it's called taxis and catharsis. And catharsis means that you employ a kind of mood and a whole language around negativity. That's no good, this is no good, that's no good. And nothing but criticism. Approaching anything. Your whole mood mindset is that. There's a sort of an element of satire. This word satire is sort of putting on a front that you were really happy. But underneath, there is this kind of black comedy, humor, that is pretty miserable, and I'm pretty miserable, but here, I'll just put on a face. We see that in life. And taking it seriously moving on from that satirical, cynical stage is to actually be proactive and positive. Now, we may not, as I said before, have the solution, but the answer here, within the next 10 minutes, is to find the questions and want to pursue them. So, I have so much stuff I was kind of looking through, and it was wonderful. I thought, where am I going to start and finish in this? But there was this book that I got to look at, and it's entitled by a Zen saying, and it's before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. I thought it was a great title. It's a guide to spiritual fulfillment in everyday life by an author, Rick Fields. He put it out in 1984. So, I just give a contents of it. Beginnings, learning, intimate relationships, sex, family, work, money, play, tuning the body, healing, technology, the earth, social action, inner guidance, and perils on the path. Now, if we had a book like that that explained our everyday life in ISKCON, great. That's what we're looking for. But we've got to be the ones that put it together. We can say, oh, the GBC, they must put it together. It's the leaders, they're at fault. But no, it isn't like that. The government is running this country as a whole. But does that mean that every single town is exactly... I know they're pretty similar when you walk up the high street and you see the shops the way that they are. But actually, each little town is different. Now, what has brought that difference to that town, that city perhaps, is based on a local initiative. It's coming from the bottom up, that people are enthused to make changes for themselves. So the local initiative I'm talking about is we create our own understanding to contribute for our own lives here at Bhaktivedanta Manor or in the wider congregation. We can't put, you know, the bigger umbrella of all of the schedules and amendments and policy guidelines together, but we can actually help ourselves. So, this. So, I've got 5 minutes, and I want to ask questions. There was a blog I was reading on Van Ashram, and it was this lady, this Mataji. Her name is Nishkala Dasi, and she wrote a book called Van Ashram, The 8 Lotus Petals. Now, she is fantastic. She's written the best of information that we're looking for. I couldn't believe reading her, what she's done. And she got so many well wishes and blessings from swamis and different people. She only wrote this very recently. She talks about the four regulative principles being at the top when we look at Van Ashram. She said they're the four principles of freedom. She says, as the poem goes, oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive. So, she then goes on to say, freedom through honesty. If one cannot follow, then the prescription given by Srila Prabhupada is Van Ashram. Not that one can be a devotee, as the only qualification for becoming a devotee is the desire to be one. In Srila Prabhupada's conversations about Van Ashram, He was stressing it means to discourage devotees from accepting principles that they could not follow, and as a means to make bhakti easy for everyone to follow. So why are excluding people, or why are people going away because they can no longer follow the four regulative principles? Let them follow a less austere version that will keep the society in a peace and prosperity. This, I really can't do justice to that in terms of holding on to people in this short time I have. So forgive me if it's a little bit, I'm sure it would provoke many questions. That's the intention, actually. Then she goes on to say, well, it's not just when we say Varnashram about sustainability and self-efficiency as a sort of a main core, where we often think cow protection, let's all be on a farm up in the mountains. And she said, it's about love. She said, it's about our approach to each other. So if we have a system in place well, as I say, I'll just read it. And in marriage, one should strive against seeing the spouse as a sense object, to treat him or her neither for sexual nor egotistic domination. If one cannot see him, her, as Krishna's own beloved, at least make him, her, one's own beloved. Let attachment not degrade into exploitation, but as a training ground for expressing loving feelings. One should try to see oneself as an instrument for Krishna's love to flow through, for such an attitude will keep one humble and devotional at the same time. She goes into a lot, because there was a blog after with a person called Akuranath, and both of them are wonderful scholars talking about this subject matter, the book and the subject matter, and all our burning questions and queries, why, you know, answers to this. They have this long, long blog, and I loved reading it, but I can't share that with you today. But I would, if anybody's interested, I'll send you that link, and you can read it. It's thorough. It's very thorough. What I wanted to just quickly go on to was, when I said that we establish Varnashram, it is through the questions that we ask. Bigger. I put it here somewhere, some questions, and I'm just going to throw them up. Sorry, bear with me. I thought I put it down here. Maybe I didn't. Oh. There were some questions I thought about. I mean, is it that we should go on pretending? Is it that we should go on pretending that we're following so strictly? Should we look at what our difficulties are and see the idea of looking at Varnashram, how it can support us better? Remember that book I was just presenting, this guidebook, which said, chop wood, carry water. And it's that principle of getting deeper into what it means to the dynamics, the relationships, the approach, our abilities to actually follow all of the brahminical principles. They pointed out that there's a lot of guilt in the grihastha community, because what they were able to practice in the ashram, in the brahmacharini ashram, austerity and renunciation and everybody pushing through, it sort of gets a bit watered down when they get into the Grihastha ashram. So is there a set of vows that can be created for the Grihastha ashram at a level that they can commit to, different for different ashrams? It's not saying it's wrong. It's a concession and it's an arrangement to say, don't feel guilty. Now this is looking at things right on, square in the face, as to just how the Grihastha ashram is operating. I'm not just pointing the finger at the Grihastha ashram, it's also in the Brahmachari ashram. What's actually possible? Are we putting up a facade that we're this brahminical and that, and so, but what about the difficulties? This makes us feel, makes me feel secure if I'm looking at issues, but we circle around them and they've become taboo areas. I'm worried. I'm going to go on for another 5 minutes. Is that all right? Because it's nearly 8:30. On a positive note, because essentially just by asking questions and presenting it in this way, it's meant to be of the mood of positiveness. It's not aimed at just saying, pulling it down. And so that's the solution, to find the questions. How are we going to do that? Well, I looked at this and I said, well, I'll just present to you some of the preaching I'm about to embark upon. And myself and a friend, congregation member or volunteer, he happens to be a professional cook. And what we're going to do is go and meet new people, completely new, and do vegetarian cooking demonstrations. Now, it's not rocket science, and it's not like it hasn't been done before. But when we talk about the issue of food, it's the easiest, as Prabhupada has presented with prasadam and the secret weapon, it's the easiest preaching tool that we have. It's the nicest way to begin a conversation. You're offering something. When business people come together, they don't just say, right, let's get down to what we need. They say, they offer some hospitality, some gesture. And that wins the hearts. That's when they really know each other's minds and hearts, when they're actually sitting at the table, having something to eat. So it's crucial. In terms of our exchanges, that's why we're having prasadam here in abundance. Thank you, Lilita Mataji. Thank you so much. So, in addition to that cooking demonstration, I'm intending to hook up 3 or 4 families in the same street or in the same vicinity who know of each other enough to say, let's be friends, at least for a night or 2 nights, come together and have that cooking demonstration. And once they have some skills and some confidence, then they'll be cooking vegetarian meals together. They'll be taking turns each week, maybe once or twice a week, to cook together. So now you have a family, a bigger, wider family. Second to that, now this is already being done out there in other communities and arrangements by different people. Second to that, you have them then, you convince them, you ask them, convince them to buy a garden shed. And then you get them all to buy food in bulk. Then the bills are down. So then those meals that they're contributing to, that they're sharing, because they're not in a commune, they're still in their own houses, they still have their independence, but they are buying in bulk. Second to that, they then purchase an allotment, which is manageable because there's 3 or 4 families. Now, how busy that allotment needs to be is up to them. So why should they grow more than they can possibly achieve? Manage. But between 3 or 4 families, it's nicely spread out. So that's a practical example of bringing a few people together, because I'll be talking about the consciousness of eating together, relating with the food, and then beginning to talk about spiritual topics. So it may seem like a small move, but it has so many ripples effects. Now, just one last thing, if I may. I was thinking about us as a society as a whole, and just looking at that situation. Do we do that? When we talk, we often blame God and say, God makes devotees poor. No. Did we actually use, inverted commas, common sense, to say, how could we actually save a little? So there is, you halve the bills in doing that by coming two or three times together. Of the week, you have a support infrastructure. I'm looking at, say, disciples, my God brothers, my God sisters, and I'm looking at 120 people. And we come round and we go, oh, okay, I wish I was more humble, I wish I was more tolerant, I wish I was more pure. And then we have something big to eat, pat ourselves on the back, and go home. That's our devotion. So I said, can't it be more than this? Can't we actually do something as a unit? Could we organize a walk together and create some funding for whatever we want? Could we go and help a particular charity, a hospital of health patients? And then, like, I'm aware that a particular guru arranged it that he's fixing everybody's eye who needed it in India. And then he got them, because everyone who had the eye operation had to chant two rounds a day, every day, from then on. And of course they agreed. And it's going on. Simple. Now, when we look at the network of devotees and I say, who are you? Oh, you're a doctor. Oh, you're a doctor. Oh, you're a doctor. Oh, you're a nurse. Oh, you're a back. So, one little section of the Varnashram. Oh, you're a lawyer. Oh, you're another lawyer. Oh, great. So, you're a carpenter. Oh, I need a carpenter. Oh, you're a plumber. Fantastic. Can we swap? So, this doesn't have to cost money. Not entirely. Between God brothers and God sisters. So, when we accept a guru, it's not like an extension to our own family, as if, where a lot of people complain that I've got so many duties and responsibilities to see so many family members, including my God brothers and God sisters. And that's an extra. It's time that we don't necessarily have. Why? Because we don't make use of that wider family. So if we have a database full of skills and occupations and abilities, and we're aware of that and start actually hooking people up, then we have a wider family. Now, simple economics. Prabhupada talked about the fact that we have to get back to an agrarian economy. What does that mean? So we're still in the cities, and so in thousands of years ago, in cities they had gardens. They had gardens in the cities. They were a little bit more spaced out. And those in administration wouldn't actually do those gardens. They would employ sudras. The brahmanas would employ sudras to work their gardens. Now, I had some detailed information about this. So it was passed over to me. I was asking these questions. So you look at what is in society, who is contributing what. And if this person is administration, you're not entirely going, with all his responsibilities, going to say, look, come and help me with the turnips. Because he can do so much more. But the principle is there that we can create a simpler life, higher thinking. It's there for our taking. The agrarian economy is not something that just turns us all into farmers, because we are split up in all these varnas. It's only natural. So it does take a lot more discussion, and I just wanted to end here. And the real future of this discussion is that we come together as an Ishtagoshti and say, we want to look today at what we're doing to employ the principles of Varnashram. We're not going to do it all at once. It's not going to be entirely easy. But having researched this before for this particular verse, there is a lot of answers. I haven't had the time to tell you of all the wonderful things that are going on right now around Varnashram. It's not as doom and gloom as we think. So I wanted to thank you for your time, patience, and if you have any questions, comments, please fire away. Or is it? It is actually time, isn't it? Okay. Thank you very much. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki.